Wow.
What's up? It's Ross, and I've got a couple of quick announcements before today's show. They're important, so don't skip this or you will bring shame to your family. First, a reminder that Barrett and I went to see Dune Part 2 in theaters, and then we recorded an hour-long discussion and review of the film, which is available to enjoy exclusively on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. Now, you may be thinking, I would love to enjoy that discussion and review of Dune Part 2. You can, and it won't cost you a dime. Right now on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, you can sign up for a free 7-day trial. That's 7 days of membership for free, and enjoy our entire discussion and review of Dune Part 2 in either audio form by joining the Clam Fam tier, or have video as an option by joining the Mollusk Militia tier. In addition to our Dune Part 2 discussion and review, subscribing on Patreon will also give you access to the other movies we've discussed and reviewed over the years, like Oppenheimer, Saltburn, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, Interstellar, Joker, Casino Royale, Tenet, 1917, Ex Machina, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Booksmart, Knives Out, and more. You can see all the movies we've discussed and reviewed by clicking on the Movie Club collection in our Patreon. And of course, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles is also home to our entire companion podcast for every single episode of HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, our weekly bonus coverage of Shogun, as well as bonus coverage for House of the Dragon, Succession, The White Lotus, The Last of Us, Foundation, Silo, and True Detective Night Country. When you join, you gain access to our entire backlog of ad-free premium content. We're talking years of OCC you've never heard or seen if you've never been on our Patreon. Again, right now it's completely free for you to join for 7 days, and then it's just $5 per month for the Clam Fam tier, or $10 per month to join the Mollusk Militia, where you also gain access to full video of most of our episodes if you're a YouTube watcher, plus the Mollusk Militia exclusive hotline for a chance to be featured on the show, and the Mollusk Militia exclusive Discord as well. All of this while supporting your favorite podcast. What a deal. Act now, as this 7-day free trial won't be available forever. Also, we appreciate you being here with us to enjoy Shogun, and remind you, we started as a Game of Thrones podcast way back in the day, so obviously we hope to be your go-to companion podcast when House of the Dragon returns for Season 2 this June. Our show is available not only on all the major podcast platforms, but also on YouTube as well, so subscribe, rate, review, comment, and share the show with those you know. Thank you very much. Now let's dive into Chapter 5 of Shogun, titled Broken to the Fist. Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and katanas presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin Sama, here today with Barrett Dudley Sama to digest and discuss the 5th episode of Shogun on Hulu/FX. Barrett, we are halfway through this season, the only season of Shogun, I might add. How are you feeling?
I feel great. I think the show is awesome. Not a single episode has missed yet, which is pretty impressive. And
very impressive.
It also feels good to be in a 10 episode season, because I don't know.
Right.
I feel like we've been getting like a lot of sixes and eights.
Yeah.
And I just think, I think 10 is right. You know what I mean? I think 10 is, if you know what you're doing, if you have the right story, then 10 is just like, that's the right number of episodes. It gives you enough time to develop stuff and really, really get to know characters. But it's not so long that you think that you feel like stuff is dragging.
Right. Or there's just filler.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And certainly there is no drag and no filler here. I do have some questions about this episode, but just another banger, dude.
It really was. I've loved watching every week. As you said, I think they've done a phenomenal job of setting up for the back half of the season through the first 5 episodes by not giving us not a single one of the first 5 felt like filler or felt like they were just like, you know, forcing something in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to even call it like setup, because I don't feel that way. Like, I don't,
right.
Like, yes, there is a lot of stuff set up, but I would like,
Yeah, but that's the best setup is when it doesn't feel like setup.
Right. Well, right. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This show has me, and I'm only partially kidding, ready to start ordering like books on the samurai lifestyle and building my own eightfold fence.
Right.
Because
right.
Seriously, like one of the things I keep taking away week after week, I'm like, God, it must have been sick when there was no technology, like no phones, no cars, no distractions, no fucking internet, no TikToking.
Yeah.
You know?
But also no running water or toilets. You'll notice we're not seeing anybody use the restroom on this show.
Oh, that's a good point.
And I don't think, because I don't think there's any bathrooms in those houses.
Yeah.
You know? I think you just got to go outside.
That's a fair point. I hadn't thought about that. Where is Blackthorn blowing it up, you know?
Yeah, right.
Nobody
right.
knows.
Yeah, because you know after all that natto and rabbit stew that he's eating, like, it's...
He's got an intestinal stew going.
Yeah. I'll just leave it at that.
All right, let's talk about all the craziness we saw in this most recent chapter. The episode starts with a cold open of Yabushige's men cleaning up the dismembered corpses from the infamous cannon practice slaughter.
It's just a meat market out there, man. They're just...
Dude, it was so gross. Like, if they didn't give us enough evidence that this was like a brutal slaughter at the end of episode 4, they made sure to remind us here at the top of episode 5.
This is a rough way to go, too. I was actually thinking about it driving over here to the stew. I was like, I don't know why I was thinking about this driving, but I was just thinking about like two cannonballs weighing, I don't know, 50 pounds each, chained together, just like ripping through your body. Like, that's probably pretty painful. I got to imagine.
No, I was honestly impressed by the one dude, Jozen, leader that they
it's yelling after he's cut in half.
Right.
Basically.
He's like, you savages. Like, he's still pretty coherent and fairly calm considering the circumstances. But yeah, as they clean, Torinaga rolls up with an army, and surprise, surprise, Buntero is with him.
Yeah, Big Bad B.
Yeah, we had a feeling based on some comments, which at the time, like, I've done this for a while, right? I've been doing this job for a while, so I can usually differentiate between people's straight-up suspicions or predictions and someone who's read the damn book giving us a spoiler.
Yes, yeah.
And on Patreon, I had mentioned that I saw a lot of people posing the question, what if Buntaro is not dead?
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me like, oh, well, damn it, whoever, they know he's not dead. He's going to come back. Yeah. He's going to come back.
I like, that's where I'm at too, because I bought hook, line, and sinker that Buntaro was out of the picture.
He was a goner, yeah.
And that was probably the biggest nit that I've picked of this entire show is just how quickly they developed the whole Buntaro thing and then dispatched with him so they could move on to Mariko Sama and Blackthorn Sexy Time. And yeah, in hindsight, pretty obvious that he does not commit seppuku there on the pier.
Right.
And he does go and fight off all those dudes. And then they do just show him like, get pushed into a empty house or something, and then
quickly off screen,
and we never see a body. We never see him actually die. And here he is, just as quickly as we thought he was dispatched. He's back.
He's right back in it, baby.
Just a couple of surface wounds, man. He's not even. He's
right.
He's
his face is scratched up. A little
scratched up. That's it.
That's all. As a reminder, Buntaro is Tota Mariko's husband, who we all thought was dead because he was left behind in Osaka and had to fight off like 50 people solo dolo. And just from the get-go here with the cold open, this is obviously going to be awkward. It was only last episode that we watched Blackthorn and Tota Mariko pillow.
Yeah, right. Did you find it suspicious at all that Buntaro is not wounded, that he, quote, had the help of a bunch of Ronin, and then only one of them was left by the time he returned to the army, and that he was facing what everybody presumed was certain death, even for this big bad warrior.
Right.
And that he's now back, like, implanted in the army, and, like, it does, like, I just thought it was almost too easy. Like,
too good to be true?
Like, are they planting that this dude is a double agent?
Maybe. I mean, it's, when you put it that way, it certainly feels like a possibility.
It felt a little too convenient to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that story.
But it could just be that's how sick of a fighter this dude is as well. So
the story about the Ronin helping him fight his way out, and that by the time they got to Edo, there were only two of them, and I assume one of them is Buntaro.
Yeah,
that was a bit suspicious, I suppose.
I'm just throwing it out there. Now that we're all teed up to suspect things and twists with
Well, and there's a lot of treachery. I mean, there's a lot of you know, spying, double agenting, playing both sides going on throughout the course of this story, which we'll get to. But yeah, so we get that information about the Ronin and Buntaro's escape from Toranaga and Todomariko talking.
Quick note here.
Yeah.
I should mention. I didn't pick this up. I knew the name sounded familiar, but it didn't register with me until I was reading. But Edo is Tokyo. That's what eventually becomes Tokyo.
Oh no shit.
So Toranaga, he's the don of Tokyo, basically. That's why it's such a big deal to get the church in Edo, because that's a massive city center.
Major city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Also makes it, just historical context-wise, a little bit cooler that that's what Toranaga was, where he hailed from.
Yeah.
Todomariko gives Toranaga a diary of everything the Anjin has said and done since she left, everything John Blackthorne has done and said, which, you know, we saw her taking notes, mm-hmm, making the instruction mm-hmm. manual out at canon practice. We assumed something was going to go on there. Toranaga also tells Toda that she and her husband will both be living with John Blackthorne now in what is Blackthorne's home, and Todomariko will be expected to serve them both, which, there's a lot going on in that house, man.
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot.
Not the easiest guys to deal with, huh?
No.
Tell you what.
No. Toranaga also tells Todomariko that he's pissed off about his son murdering Ishido's men at the demonstration of the cannons, because Ishido will likely use that as a pretext for war. And this is one thing it was kind of hard to get a feel for over the course of the episode. Like,
yes,
we obviously have another conversation coming up between Toranaga and Yabushige. But, like, whether or not Toranaga was actually upset, or if he assumed that something shitty like this would go down, and that's kind of why he got out of there, because he knew surely that Ishido and the Council of Regents would send somebody to come fetch Yabushige at the very least. Like, it was hard to get a feel for that.
Yes.
Because as we know at this point, Toranaga, with the three hearts, he's not always revealing exactly what he's thinking.
That's right. And I think we're still supposed to be a little bit in the dark. I think that Toranaga is he's a gamesman, you know?
He's scheming, man.
He's a savvy guy, that Toranaga.
He stays scheming.
And so my read was that, yeah, he's not thrilled about this, especially with the kind of the dressing down of his son.
Right. His boy got played.
You're not ready to be the leader of canon practice. You're not ready to run canon practice. You know,
you can't coach yet.
You can't coach yet. Yeah. And so, just to skip forward quickly and mention it, like, I think then he turns it to continue playing Yabushige.
Right.
When he expresses, like, how good of a thing this could be. Like, I think it's real. Like,
why would you punish Omi? He crushed it.
He basically does the Office episode where Dwight gets Michael gets Dwight to take credit for the golden ticket idea, and then David Wallace thinks it's a great idea, and then Michael's pissed that Dwight is taking all the credit.
That he gave it to Dwight, yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens here.
Yeah.
Yabushige blames it on Omi, and then he's like, oh, well, I thought it was a great idea. And then Yabushige's like, damn it, son of a bitch.
Yeah, yeah, that's fantastic. A lot of little subtle humor like that inserted into this show, usually revolving around Yabushige,
yes,
I would know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does a lot of the, like, classic, like, you know, I thought that was always like a Japanese, like, a thing in cinema mostly, uh-huh. But there must be, like, some historical context for those, like, humbling noises, humbled noises uh-huh. that he makes. So Toranaga orders Todomariko to give this pheasant that his falcon just killed to John Blackthorne, which becomes quite an ordeal later on. And then he schools his son on how killing Ishido's man, Jozen, was actually doing Yabushige's bidding. It's always cool how, like, Toranaga's so on top of the ball, man. Like, he figures things out very, very quickly, right?
Yep.
It doesn't take a whole lot of investigation for him to know exactly what's going on.
I'll also play devil's advocate and take the side that maybe Toranaga did expect something like this to go down, is because, speaking of things that are convenient, he sure rolls up at the right time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, oh my, what am I stumbling upon here? Oh no, you killed all these men. Shoot. Yeah, like, so like, yeah, it's now, again, we're watching a TV show. He needs to show back up. the timing might just be TV writing, right?
For the sake of the narrative.
But like I said, I think we're still supposed to be a little unsure.
I mean, he even immediately assumes that it was not only, you know, to Yabushige's purposes that this happened,
yes,
but that it was his nephew Omi who did it.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't even have to go have a conversation with anybody. No. He's telling his son this, Nagakoto, straight up, like, that you got played by Omi, that he talked you into this, basically.
Yeah. And all of this, the showing up, everything, I think it's also tied to the spy. I think that spy is really running him, like, constant messages.
Great point.
The way that he knows and that he susses things out, very on top of things, very on the ball. And I also liked in this episode how a lot of the questions that we left with last episode are pretty much immediately answered.
Right.
Like, yes, Omi and Yabushige did play this guy. They did plant this seed in his mind. They did rile him up and get him to do something rash like this. Worked perfectly to their kind of end goal. So
that they could continue playing the middle, playing both sides, right?
Yeah.
Torunaga also gives this kind of cool speech to Nagakoto about how all men are like falcons,
mm-hmm,
and that until he understands this, Nagakoto will no longer be coaching cannon practice.
That's right. Also, a nice callback with both this speech and what Nagakoto does, and then the falcon. It's like one of the very first scenes in the entire series, right? When he talks about letting, like, we're calm and tranquil, and we're gonna lay low until our enemies make a mistake, right? And that's kind of like the exact opposite of what Nagakoto does. He's the one that kind of makes the mistake here, we can presume.
Yeah, they've done a couple of those connecting of things we've already seen that have played out very, very well on screen. Back in Osaka, the remaining Council of Regents come to terms with the fact that they can no longer impeach Torunaga because he has resigned, and because these slapdicks cannot get along, they can't agree on a replacement for Torunaga to make their council whole again. Some more subtle humor here in these scenes where, you know, one guy he's saying, like, I suggest this person, and then another person is so insulted by that suggestion, they say they would rather kill themselves than serve on the council with him. Somebody says, I suggest this person, then somebody else insults that person, and then somebody else points out that that person is actually the cousin of somebody else that's on the council. It was beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Shortly after failing to elect a new member, they receive a delivery of Jozen's head. Now, who sent the head?
Don't know.
Was definitely a question here, right?
Yes.
Like, because I don't, like, did Torunaga roll in, like, what a shame this occurred.
Send the head.
Lop off the head, send it to the council, right?
Yeah,
so, yeah, I think maybe we'll get more detail on that, I would have to imagine, in part six. John Blackthorne is super stoked on receiving this pheasant.
Probably Yabushige.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
and I feel like they're gonna drive the wedge and then play the
take advantage of that.
No, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
you're
yes.
right.
But we don't know. We don't know.
I mean, both would make Torunaga would make sense too. I really don't know.
Yeah.
Not sure who should take responsibility for the head sending yet.
Yeah.
Blackthorne loves that he received this pheasant. He's honored by it. He wants to hang it up outside his house. And at first, I was like, I thought he was saying we hang it up for a few days, and it'll like ripen in the sun,
right.
And then we'll use it to make food. But I think he was just saying, like, we hang it up for a few days, it'll reek like hell, but everybody will know, like, I got this special pheasant from the big guy.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. He's talking about that it needs to be prepared properly.
Right, but it didn't.
And how he, this was one of the things during his formative years, like, one of the first things on a hunt, he learned how to clean birds, like that type of thing.
But they're not cleaning this one.
I have no idea what he is doing here. Like, I guess he's... He thinks this is the way to get the meat ready?
I think he was just showing off.
Or is he just...
I don't think he ever had an intention of cooking this thing. Because as we see, like, it gets absolutely...
Yeah, he's just letting it rot up
covered
there.
In flies.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it was just the way he presented this concept to his people at his home of hanging it up was slightly confusing. Because it had this air of preparing it for a meal,
yes,
but then very clearly, like, you could not serve this.
It seems like that would be quite obvious, right?
Everyone would get sick, even to
Blackthorne, that
right,
you can't
yeah.
serve this disgusting, rotting bird.
Yeah, so I think it was more of like a displaying a trophy.
Okay.
You know, like, I've been honored by Torunaga given this pheasant, and now we're gonna hang it up outside the crib.
Okay.
The Japanese are very clearly weirded out by this choice. His consort, Fuji, tries to talk him out of it, but Blackthorne insists and goes so far as to say that if anyone moves the pheasant, they will die. He says, forbidden. If touch, die, in his broken Japanese.
Yes.
Which,
They take very literally.
My
as
God.
It, as it turns out.
so literal. Lord Tota, otherwise known as Buntaro, is extremely displeased with having to live with this barbarian and share his home with him. He's also that his wife has been sharing his home with Blackthorn. He expresses this displeasure to Fuji, and kind of cool to see Fuji a little defensive of Blackthorn, saying like, "Well," he asks like, "You know, what's it like serving a barbarian?" She's like, "Well, I wouldn't know, because I serve a Hatamoto."
That's right.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay. Good. Good. Good little relationship they've got going.
Fuji. Totally, like, she starts blossoming in the previous episode. She's really getting, like...
Good character,
good character, getting some shine. Yeah, she's really coming into her own, and yes.
Yes. Yeah. Torunaga goes and meets with Yabushige, tells him he's pissed off about Jozen and the slaughter of Ishido's men, calls him out for playing both sides pretty directly, and quickly gets Yabushige to admit it was indeed his nephew Omi who convinced Nagakato to do what he did. And then when Yabushige says he'll punish Omi personally, like we already talked about, Torunaga says there's no need for punishment because Omi has forced the Council of Regents to take offense and leave Osaka to attack them, which this is where I was like, oh, maybe, yeah. I think Torunaga wanted this all along.
Yeah, see, it was hard to tell. It was really hard to tell. Maybe he did, and maybe he was still just using the opportunity to tell his son that he's a dipshit. You know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I knew you were going to be a dipshit. That's why I left. But you're still bad on you for being a dipshit.
You're demoted. but yeah, he says it gives him a better chance at victory if
he doesn't
drawn
have to go
out
to,
from
right,
Osaka.
Yes.
If they have to go to Osaka, it's going to be much more difficult.
Certain defeat.
Yeah. He also tells Yabushige to let his nephew Omi know that he is now the coach of cannon practice.
Yeah.
The head of the Anjin's artillery, as he puts it. And Yabushige, like Barrett said, he's bummed that he didn't take credit for this, and he's not the one getting a special promotion or any props here. And I think also just frustrated that Torunaga sees through everything.
Yes, and he's constantly 1 to 2 to potentially 3 steps ahead.
And the one thing to Yabushige's credit that he recognizes is like, this is because of the damn spy.
Yeah, there's a spy. Yeah,
there's a spy, and I'm pissed off
there's
about
it. There's a
leak.
A mole, if you will.
Yeah, so... He
moly, moly, moly.
Such a bad movie. He continues angrily searching for said spy and tells Omi he is now in charge of the cannon regiment. Then he sends one of his men who has an eye patch to Osaka to patch things up with Ishido, no pun intended. And I do think it's kind of weird. Like, one of my big questions through episode 5 is, like, Torunaga being as all-knowing as he seems to be, knowing that his main man here, Yabushige, is very much playing both sides... And is not to be trusted.
Right.
Yet, like, he continues putting Yabushige in a position to better his own situation. Like, allowing Yabushige to send this dude to Osaka. I mean, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think what that speaks to is that Torunaga does not mind leaving many chess pieces on the board to toy around with as he pleases. Because I was even thinking about this with... with Blackthorn, when Blackthorn eventually, like, you know, he's like, okay, I'm done. I want to leave. Get me out of here. And, like, you know, Torunaga's not going to let him because this is he's such a useful chip.
It's his ace in the hole.
It's his ace in the hole. He's got the cannon practice running. Not to mention, it's pissing off the Christians. Like, this dude is doing so much for him. And that's how I also kind of like am viewing the relationship with Yabushige. Like, I 100% agree that it's dangerous to just be letting this guy, you know,
do his thing.
But I also think that maybe it's some hubris, right? That Torunaga thinks that he can essentially stay ahead of Yabushige and continue to use him as a pawn as well. But it's a great question, and it's a really makes for a fascinating relationship between the two of them because of that dynamic where Torunaga, like, definitely knows this dude is playing both sides and talking to Ishido and trying to save his own skin. I did think it was interesting in this episode that Yabushige still seems pretty certain that Torunaga is the losing side.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of faith in Torunaga's long-term plan here.
Yeah, yeah. And so that part is interesting to me. And I, like, yeah, Ishido's at the head of the council and seems to have the seat of power more so, but, like, I don't know. I think I'd be riding with Torunaga.
I think it's just a matter of numbers that Yabushige sees.
Right.
And the four remaining council members having more numbers is leading him to believe that they're going to be on the losing side.
Yeah, eventually they'll impeach this dude. Eventually they will kill him. Like,
yeah, but it, on the other side, like Torunaga, his seemingly most powerful ally, Yabushige, being treacherous is very strange.
Yes.
Right? So the pheasant back at Blackthorn's place begins to fester. Flies are all over this thing. It's truly gross. Everybody at the house is disgusted. The servants, his consort, Fuji's grossed out. Everybody's like, what the hell? Blackthorn's gardener, Ujiru, is grossed out, and he plants a rock in the garden, which is cool, I guess. Blackthorn meets Buntaro, who wants to be addressed as Toto-sama because Buntaro is a name reserved only for his friends. They're insulting each other back and forth off the bat. The vibes are not great. Todomariko obviously has to serve as a translator between these men and is constantly trying to keep them from further offending each other by slightly altering their words.
Yeah, but we've kind of had this conversation before with Mariko's translation.
Yeah.
I would be doing so much more softening of what these guys are saying.
Yeah, she kind of picks her spots, huh?
Like, I don't know. Like, maybe don't tell your husband that this guy just told him that you should be treated better.
Right.
Like, that seems like you're throwing fuel on the fire,
well,
right?
Well, that was... we'll get to that scene. I'll have more to say about that scene when we get there. But, yeah, it seems like she really picks the spots where she's directly translating almost verbatim versus times that she's completely changing what someone says or just slightly softening. Like, she's got a lot of different ways she chooses to translate.
But yeah, you know, I don't love confrontation or tension, you know, in my own personal life. So that's probably why I'm so like, oh God, I would just be saying whatever.
Yeah. Well, babe, Blackthorn even tells her at one point, you don't have to tell me the story about your family's history.
Yeah, just say anything.
He's not going to know the difference. Just say whatever you want.
Yeah, but yes, immediate tension. And Buntaro's this gruff dude, doesn't like that his wife is anything but his wife, doesn't like her new found position as the translator and maybe getting a little bit of, you know, just some hand in the get some skin in the game. Definitely doesn't like that she's been helping and living with this barbarian. But yeah, if I'm Blackthorn, I'm being as nice as I possibly can. I'm not trying to let this guy know that I shagged his wife last night.
Just shagged her.
Yeah,
it was a few days ago. Like, yeah man, maybe like, play it cool.
Play
here.
It cool. Play it
Good
cool.
God,
yes.
So that night at dinner with Buntaro, Todomariko, and Fuji, Blackthorn tries to serve English rabbit stew, but nobody wants it. They all refuse. They say they have very particular tastes. Yeah. You know. Buntaro mocks the way Blackthorn eats his noodles. Blackthorn then tries to copy Buntaro's slurping to reveal the depth of his pleasure. And then things just quickly unravel into a full-blown big dick contest between these two dudes. Blackthorn mocks Buntaro's tiny cup, dumps his own bowl out into the yard, then fills it with sake and starts a drinking contest, which essentially results in both men getting blackout drunk eventually. Blackthorn gives a rendition of a classic toast. If you cheat, cheat death. If you steal, steal the heart of a woman. If you lie, lie in the everlasting warmth of her bosom. And if you drink, drink with me. Which is just it kind of a nice look. Because he's been sort of progressing.
Classic pirate toast.
Yes. It was a nice throwback to the pirate life because he's been progressing like socially, you know, his manners have been built up a little bit.
Learning a little bit of honor code.
He's getting the culture down.
Yes.
But then when he, you know, gets enough sake in him, right back to the pirate quotes. Todomariko tries to get this dinner to end, saying that Fuji-sama appears to be tired. Fuji's like, whoa, don't throw me under the bus. What are you doing? But Blackthorn refuses to let the dinner end. He wants to hear the story of Buntaro's escape from Osaka. Buntaro refuses, saying, quote, heroism is for the dead and stories are for children. Blackthorn insists. Buntaro busts out his bow and arrow and tells Blackthorn to choose a post. Like, it escalates so quickly. Blackthorn chooses the right post, which, in hindsight, should have gone with the left. Turns out the right, about 2 inches from Todomariko's face.
Yeah.
Buntaro sends two arrows zinging right past his wife's nose. Cool. Slow motion, slow down, like Max Payne style effect there. And right through the door. So like, you and I texted a little bit about this scene last night.
Yeah.
But we don't see where these arrows are headed in this initial shot. And they're going through, when I say through the door, I don't mean the open door. I mean literally through the paper door.
Yes.
Like there's a little hole he's created right there and, through the door.
Yeah, and I'll just, like, okay, so I'm going to jump around a little bit here. I loved this scene between these two guys. Really nice job ratcheting up the tension, the tossing out of the noodles and then putting the sake in, and then he does the same, and, like, the drinking contest is all super well done. Once we get to the arrow shooting, like, this dude punches a hole in the paper door and then sends the second arrow straight through that same tiny hole.
Yeah.
So there's no, like, a cut to Blackthorne seeing that this guy nailed the post with two arrows that basically flew into each other.
Right.
You already saw that the guy threaded the needle on the second shot. Like,
yeah, but I think it's different entirely to see the landing spot.
Yeah.
Like, that he hit, not only hit this target, like, it's one thing to send the arrow through the same hole twice.
Right.
When that hole was 4 feet from you.
Sure. But then to have them both in the same location.
Like, okay. He almost did the Robin Hood where you, like, split one arrow with the other,
yes.
You know?
Yep. Yep.
So I think that was just, like, affirming, like, this dude is, even when he's pissed drunk on sake,
yeah,
he's nasty with it. Like, okay. He's got a really, really, really keen shot.
Yes. But so continue, because I do have a little bit of a question here.
Yeah. So then Bontaro keeps drinking as Blackthorne protests his actions, saying his wife merits better, right? This is where we got into the part you and I kind of already mm-hmm. brought up, where it's like, why is she translating this? Lie, for the love of God. Because the tension is at this, like, climactic point. And we're all praying, like, not, like, you know, blood doesn't spill here at this dinner.
Yeah, why don't you just be like, the engine says that you have a very good shot.
Right, yes, yeah. And he hopes the scratches on your face heal well tonight when we sleep, which we should all go do now. But no, it's almost like she was resigned to conflict at that point.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, oh, fuck it, I'll just translate.
And I speaking of honor, right, like, in this culture, you got to serve. You got to do your duty. So I think that when we see her bend, she probably feels bad about even bending.
Yeah.
What these people are saying, because she feels so honor bound to translate, to do this job.
Yeah, it's her job. You got to do it. Bontaro makes Todomariko tell Blackthorne her real name and family history. So, you know, we know this guy's not the nicest.
No.
We've seen evidence that he's kind of a prick, right? But when he's drunk, things get worse, it turns out, which is often the case with these types.
Yeah, then.
So it turns out she is the daughter of the late Lord Akechi Jinsai, whose lord was Kuroda-sama, the ruler of Japan before the Taiko. Okay, and Kuroda-sama was corrupt and murderous, so Todomariko's father killed him out of love for the realm, she says. And then they made her father kill her entire family, mother, brothers, sisters, before committing seppuku himself. And the only reason she wasn't killed, it sounds like, is because she was just married.
Yeah.
So she became someone else's property, Bontaro's.
Right.
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 She was not permitted to fight. And each year on the anniversary of her family's murder, she asks her husband to let her take action against this injustice, excuse me. But she can't do anything because her husband orders her to live, she says.
And I took that to mean that what she would like to do is kill herself.
On the anniversary of this injustice.
That is the action against the injustice that she would like to take.
Not that she wants to go kill a bunch of people in revenge,
no.
Go John Wick with it.
Right.
It's that she wants to take her own life.
Yeah, leading to the question, right? Like, what does she think the injustice is? The fact that she was not permitted to die with her family, or that her father had to do all of this, right? And I think it's probably the former. Like, I think that's what bothers her more, is that she was not given the essentially the dignity to die with her family.
To take part in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good point, though, because it is a really interesting distinction.
Right. Yeah.
That we don't get. Like, well, what do you mean? Which part of it makes you upset? Right? Also, a callback to an earlier episode, Todomariko tells Blackthorne that Torinaga gave her the opportunity to right this wrong. To act on this injustice that occurred. Does that mean Torinaga gave her, like, an end date? Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, because if the end game for her is she wants to kill herself on the anniversary.
When is that? When does she say that?
I think it was episode 2 or 3.
Oh,
she's
okay,
telling
okay.
Blackthorne, like, her story. Like, basically, Torinaga gave me purpose again.
Got it.
Saved me and gave me a way to right this wrong that was incurred upon me.
Mm.
And that makes me wonder if, like, Torinaga gave her permission to eventually commit seppuku or what the deal is there.
Or maybe the new purpose is
just serving him.
Serving, and that's what fulfills fulfills her and kind of like covers up that void at the very least.
Perhaps. She asks, so as this is unfolding and she's having to share her the family details that she clearly did not want to share with Blackthorn, she ends that story and then asks Blackthorn to remember the eightfold fence.
Yeah.
She's like, I would ask you, please remember the eightfold fence. Like, don't freak out right now.
Yeah.
Don't do anything brash. Just stay chill, bro.
Yeah. Another, and again, very well done to kind of leave us kind of thinking about the eightfold fence, but wondering why the episode was titled that, wondering why that brief of a conversation about the eightfold fence, and but the episode is titled it. And then here we go, like just a really nice job of planting seeds, kind of leaving you with a question, but then answering the question a little bit.
Yeah, and it coming up, it just continuing to play a part
and to come up and fill in details where we need them.
Absolutely.
In a way, you know?
So she excuses herself, and then we kind of cut away from that scene, which was good because I kept wondering, like, how is this dinner going to end?
Yeah.
So she just kind of leaves,
yep.
And he's really pissed off, like, who gave you permission to leave? And that's that. So later that night, when Blackthorn is passed out face down on his floor, he's awoken to the sound of Bontaro beating Todomariko. He storms in, you know, Fuji tries to stop him, but he's like, get out of my way, gets in there, sees that she's bloodied, then runs outside with his one remaining pistol to pursue and confront Bontaro, who has not gotten very far. And as he yells at him, Bontaro stops, turns to Blackthorn, removes his sandals, places his swords down on the ground in front of him, takes a seat, and then bows to Blackthorn, asking forgiveness for disturbing the peace of his home because of sake. And then he repeats, because of sake.
Well, first he just says sake.
Yeah.
Like he wants more sake.
I thought he was saying it like, sake is the reason.
He was, but I think Blackthorn responds to the first time when he just says sake as like, you want more sake?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you crazy
sake?
Bastard.
Sake? When he gets upset, man, that accent that he gets going, Blackthorn
is hilarious.
And
then he manages to say, like, because of sake.
Okay, yeah.
Is why he's dishonored. But okay. Did you take this apology as legitimate?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough read, right? Because at this point, we're really teed up to not like Bontaro. We get the impression that he's just a flaming asshole to his wife and that he does violence against her right before the scene, right? He's like abusing her and he's shit-faced and he's kind of running away here, it feels like.
Yeah.
But the way this unfolds, I felt like he was sort of giving Blackthorn permission to like execute him if he saw necessary.
That's what I thought at first. I was like, wait, what is happening here? Is this...
Again, back to the honor code and stuff,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Also, the way this show, speaking of planting seeds, introduces seppuku so early on, and then just, you know, they're toying with us. Every time somebody does something dishonorable and then like sits down or kneels down, you're like, oh my God, here it comes. Somebody's going to do this thing. So just another brilliant way to like keep tension mounted in this show. Is that anytime somebody does something dishonorable and then like bows or kneels or takes off their sword or puts their shoes away, you're like, ah, oh, fuck.
Here comes the seppuku. But it never comes. But we're just being teased endlessly here.
Yeah. But that's kind of what I thought of as first. I was like, oh, dude, is this dude just going to go out right here? But of course he's not. I wondered, I'll just jump to a theory real quick. He like, it doesn't seem in character for him to kind of turn down this confrontation, this fight. He doesn't like this guy.
Yeah, but I think this is where the rules of the society come into play.
Okay.
Like, it's his house.
Yeah.
He did disturb the peace.
Yeah.
He just beat up his wife,
okay,
you know, in the middle of the night.
All right, so I
think that's where...
I think this tracks, but he, you know, he lays down his sword. Blackthorn is carrying a gun, which probably tilts the scales in his favor a little bit. He keeps saying the sake. Eventually, Blackthorn's like, you know, off with you, like, fuck you, walks away, sees the arrows in the post, perfectly, you know, positioned, perfectly placed. And Lara's read on this was what I kind of texted you about last night, was that this dude is blaming the sake for his actions, but was clearly in control enough to still place two arrows perfectly.
Right.
Like he's still got a hold on that. And I was mixed. I thought that was a good take, a good read. But also, I was kind of thinking, like, no, that's just how baller this dude is with it. This guy's Katniss Everdeen with the bows.
Yeah. I think it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter how much he's had to drink. He is an expert bowman.
Yeah, he's a marksman.
This
dude is like the ultimate sniper with a bow and arrow. And I think that was it. It's that no matter how, you know how, like, what can I compare it to? Some people get drunk and they're better at golf.
Right, right.
Right? If you're like, this guy is so good, such a good shot, no amount of sake can take that skill away from him, is kind of my read. Yeah. I didn't think it was necessarily like, oh, he's using sake as an excuse for the abuse. Because you got to remember, the abuse is not a crime here.
Yeah.
Blackthorne is offended and pissed off by it, in part because he clearly has feelings for this woman and shagged her like 2 days ago.
But dishonoring the house is the crime.
That's in Buontaro's eyes, that's the crime.
Yeah.
Dishonoring the house.
Okay.
Nothing to do with what he's done to his wife, really.
So we think that your read is that Blackthorne seeing those arrows is just like, holy shit, this dude is on one.
He's just like, god damn, yeah.
Wasted on the sake,
right.
Can't control himself, and he still dropped these two arrows, you know, on a dime like that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Also, I would note, Buontaro, like, I don't think it's a matter of, again, this is why I read into it as he has to honor the societal rules. It's not that he doesn't want to fight Blackthorne, because he even says at one point, like, the cannons, all that shit doesn't impress me. Mm-hmm. I still think the highest level samurai beats a cannon regiment, essentially.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's looking at the gun like, I don't have a fair fight here.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and apologize. I think it's just straight up. He's like, god damn it. All right. Well, I fucked up. I got to apologize.
I do think you're right. I thinking more about it, even if he does take this fight and kill Blackthorne, that probably means he's dead too, because that would be a huge dishonor.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yeah. Then Torunaga's going to have him executed. Yeah. So yeah, Blackthorne calls him a piece of shit and walks off disgusted, sees the two arrows that split the right post, and that's that. And if you want dinner to go better than that one did, today's sponsor, Factor, can help. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals that nobody in the house will refuse, unlike Blackthorne's rabbit stew. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. Sometimes when the end of the day rolls around for me, I am simply too tired to cook or don't have all the right ingredients I need to make dinner, and I just want to melt into my couch and watch an episode of my favorite TV show and for a delicious meal to magically appear in front of me. Factor essentially accomplishes just that. We're talking 2-minute meals. People fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. They got pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. No prep, no mess meals. Factor's meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. And flexible to your schedule, get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. I've got 2 kids and too many dogs, and at the end of the day, it can be extremely chaotic as a result, so it's nice that on some nights when my wife and I are just flat out of energy, we can turn to Factor to make sure we're still eating well. I've probably had all 35 different meal options at this point. Everything Factor delivers is phenomenal, and Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast premium options with no cooking required. Sign up and save. We have done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/OCC50 and use code OCC50 to get 50% off. That's code OCC50 at factormeals.com/OCC50 to get 50% off. You can see the URL and the code in the description below this episode. Okay, so moving forward, Torunaga and his son Nagakoto meet with their spy, Moraji, who I would note, they have done a great job of keeping present in almost every episode slight and subtle ways. Moraji is the first dude who spots Blackthorne's ship, if I'm not mistaken, back in episode 1 when he's out going to fish on the coast or whatever. They inform Moraji that Yabushige is hunting for a spy in Moraji's village, and Moraji's immediately like, oh my God, let me surrender myself. But Torunaga informs us, because Moraji is actually his long-serving proud samurai, whose real name is Tonomoto Akinao, he will need to serve somebody else up as the spy. So this was kind of a reveal, because I just figured this dude, Moraji, was like, you know, some local villager.
Local villager, fisherman.
Torunaga sought out and kind of maybe even forced into being a spy. no, this guy is actually a hardcore samurai, and Miraji is essentially like a fake identity.
Yeah.
An alternate, you know, name that he's using to go and do all this shit, which is, this was, it was cool. It just made it even cooler,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so the way this plot line plays into the remainder of the episode is also really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Good writing. But yeah, they tell Miraji, no, you can't give him yourself. Can't give yourself up. Find somebody else to take the fall, right? So the morning after the dinner gone horribly wrong, Blackthorn cannot find Tota Mariko, so he goes looking for her, and then when he finds her, she tells him they shouldn't be seen together, for one. She also explains the sad background of the swords he carries, which Fuji gifted to him. Basically, giving an example of, like, there are certain things we just don't do, and like, Fuji doesn't need to know that her family was disgraced, so we keep that from her,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that she says she will give her husband nothing, not even her hatred, because that's what he deserves, basically. Like, he
deserves nothing.
Yeah, he doesn't even deserve a reaction
exactly.
from her,
yeah.
right? She tells Blackthorn that he is actually the one that is imprisoned, if freedom is all he'll ever live for, because he'll never be free of himself.
Mm-hmm.
This was a deep conversation.
It
She's
was
throwing
very
out
deep.
Some...
And I thought it was super nicely well done how Blackthorn becomes the audience avatar here, because for anybody in a Western culture, especially America, watching the level of honor here, watching the willingness to kind of like succumb to death, essentially, is really, really shocking and hard to kind of like wrap your head around.
Well, it's like what we fear most, right?
Yeah. And so his kind of like questioning of that willingness to just like let things happen is definitely echoing how we kind of feel as an audience watching some of this stuff play out.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because like I don't, you leave that conversation or I did anyway, still kind of being on Blackthorn's side of things. Like, no, like you, I think you should seek the freedom. You should live for your life.
You got to get out of here.
And then of course we go on to more of the story about how this is all, we live and then we die. And beyond that, we control nothing. And like the things that we do control are beyond that, we don't control anything. And so like our actions are like meant to serve a greater good.
Right.
Essentially.
Greater purpose. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's very well done how you kind of leave, probably still relating more to Blackthorn here. And then they kind of complete the circle a little bit on how and why they are able to live like that.
They hammer home the point.
Yeah,
so Tota Mariko says she will honor her duty as Blackthorn's translator, but from this day forward, the only words they will share will be from others' lips, which is, I guess, if you're on the romantic side of this story,
yeah.
Bummer.
Tough
right?
break. Tough break for the budding relationship between the two of them. Guess what, though? I'm going to predict at least one more pillowing.
Yeah, I don't, right? Because that's just... That was too obvious, their chemistry from the get-go. First time they're in the same room, he's looking at her like, oh, yeah. So I don't think the pillowing is done, Barrett. I think you're right there. So Blackthorn returns home, but on the way, he's kind of passing by all these people in the village that are, like, crying. He's like, what are all these people all bummed out about? Well, it turns out Fuji has had his gardener, Ujiro, killed because he moved this pheasant. And at first I was like... Damn, Fuji did it herself. Like, I thought she murdered the fucking gardener.
I think she may have.
I think she had something to do with it, but like Tota Mariko gives us a fuller version of the story. Like, mm-hmm. we had to call a meeting with the head of the town, and everybody was like, we have to do something about this pheasant, and then Ujiro volunteered because he's been sick lately, which I don't know what the fuck being sick lately had to do with it. Maybe he's attributing his sickness to the pheasant. Like,
The explanation, just to go forward a little bit. At first, we're shocked, we're scandalized by this. Like, they took this guy at his word, and they executed this poor gardener because he moved the pheasant. It's later explained to us that, like, they basically had a they family meeting, y'all. They came together and were like, okay, we got to get rid of this pheasant. Something has to be done. But this guy, the Anjin, whose house it is, who we have to listen, he said that if you touch it, you die.
Quote, forbidden, quote, if touch, die. Yeah, yeah.
So Ujiro comes through and is like, I'm old. I'm sick.
Okay.
I probably don't have that much longer to go anyway. Like, let me take this one. I am going to fall on the sword. I will get rid of the pheasant.
Okay.
And you
knowing that I will be killed as a result.
Knowing that I will be killed for it.
Got it.
Yeah, no, but they come together. And that again, like that's why Mariko explains that this was for a greater purpose, for a greater good. Like, they something had to be done, and they came up with a solution that involved this guy's life.
Yeah, but it's still ridiculous.
I mean, it sounds insane to
us. As a Western mind, you're like, why wouldn't they just be like, all right, look, we're all going to turn our backs. Somebody grab that fucking thing and throw it out into the sea.
Yeah.
None of us will know who it was, and we'll never speak of this again.
Because
that's not how they roll.
That's not how they roll.
So instead, they're like, family meeting, y'all. And is anybody here old and dying already that we can just sacrifice for this, just for this pheasant?
For the pheasant.
For a pheasant, right? So, like, Blackthorn is disgusted. First of all, he's pissed off at Fuji. And she begs him to end her life. Everybody just wants to fucking die.
I mean, really, the people do seem to have a death wish.
God, which is like, it bums Blackthorn out even further, because the thing that's really rubbing him the wrong way is they don't seem to value life.
Yeah.
They don't seem to place a lot of stock in life, right?
And yeah.
And he has a good quote in a little bit that I'll get to, but like, he's freaking out right here. He tells them all to, like, fuck off, essentially, because he just can't even handle how this went down, that his gardener is now dead. And he goes to see Torunaga. And he's like, look, man, I held up my end of the bargain. I ran cannon practice. I served as your cannon coach. You said I could have my ship and my men back. I want them both now so that I can leave here and never come back to this place. And Torunaga is almost not even paying attention to Blackthorn's, like, requests. He instead immediately senses a connection between Todomariko and Blackthorn, and he says, quote, there's a shadow on both of you. Like, he can tell, like, mm-hmm. Oh, you fucked him, didn't you? You know what I mean? And then Blackthorn, just him and Todomariko, kind of break off into a side conversation where, like, she's not even translating for Torunaga anymore. Mm-hmm. Torunaga can kind of tell they're having their own conversation, and he's just like, I can't be bothered with this silliness. And he gets up and, like, walks off. Mm-hmm. But they keep talking. She gives him the explanation that Barrett just laid out about Ujiro and how he died for a larger purpose. I'm an idiot. So when I was watching it, I thought she was saying, like, yeah, he got sick because of being in the garden around all these flies
time. I think she does also mention that it was becoming like a public
issue
health
for the
crisis.
Yes. Yeah, but you're absolutely right, though. This guy was sick, like, in a bad way.
He was terminally ill, most likely.
On his way out, potentially, and was just like, I got this one. I want to go down as the dude who took care of the pheasant.
Took care of the pheasant, yeah.
At least I'll have a story, right?
That's right.
So Todomariko says Ujiro died for a greater purpose. And, quote, it was a better ending than he could have hoped for.
Yeah.
Which, again, in their eyes, like, perfectly fine, not disrespectful. In my eyes, like, that's the best ending he could have hoped for?
Yeah.
The dude who took out the pheasant? But Blackthorn...
He saved the town from a likely COVID outbreak.
Yeah. You know?
He's got a wet market hanging up in the rafters at Anjin's house.
Yeah, everybody at the Anjin house was going to be like, you know, what's it called? The place where it starts or whatever?
Yeah, the Ground Zero.
Ground Zero, thank you. I was like about to say Agent Zero. Blackthorn kind of... By the end of this conversation with Todomariko, has sort of like picked up on what he's done. One of the other lessons here is like he's learning in Japanese culture the power of your words. What you say really, really matters, which is another thing that runs very counter to Western culture.
Totally.
Well, we'll just say whatever the hell. Like, I mean, you know, this is the irony being this is a podcast. I say things on a regular basis that I'm not putting any weight behind, right? But in this culture, everything you say carries a ton of weight, especially when you're in the position of Hatamoto that he's in, right? The higher up you are, and all these people are beholden to your word. So you can't just be throwing craziness out all willy-nilly and saying things like forbidden and if touch, die, because that shit gets taken literally, and people die, it turns out, including your fucking gardener, which is a real bummer because you kind of had a thing going with this guy. It's a cool moment here that we don't get to enjoy for very long, because a fucking earthquake hits immediately, which causes a massive landslide.
I knew the term landslide.
Yeah.
And I always thought about it as like, you know, some boulders and mud running down like a mountain.
Right.
But I guess that's really more of a mudslide.
That's more of a, depending on the circumstances.
I was like in awe at the graphics here. At watching like Earth move,
it was sick, right?
Because I don't think I'd ever stopped to consider that that's what a landslide looks like,
right? That's why it's a like slide.
The tectonic fucking plates are like shifting beneath you or something. And a whole mountain is moving. Like, that's insane to me.
Right. Now, and that's why there's a Fleetwood Mac song about it called Landslide. But yeah, so this landslide.
That's exactly what they were talking
that's
about.
That's exactly, right. So nearly kills Torunaga, buries him beneath the earth. I thought he was a goner. Yeah, I thought they were hitting us with like a hardcore.
Logan Roy. Episode three, he's done.
Like, boom, he's gone, fallout, or like, a, you know, Game of Thrones season one, penultimate moment type of thing where you just
It definitely crossed my mind. I was like, oh, shit, are they going to do this?
Because he goes over, man. Yeah, like, he's off the cliff. But Blackthorn rushes down there, saves him, and succeeds. But Torunaga lost his swords. Like, this is one thing that I was like, well, y'all didn't even look for the swords. They're like, dig him up, hurry! They get him out, and he's like, oh, fuck, my swords. And Blackthorn's immediately like, here, take these disgraced swords that Fuji gave me. And Torunaga is so thankful. But I was like, y'all, dig around a little. Like, the swords are probably right there, too. Goddamn.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a funny scene. I get it. It just felt like they were kind of forcing Fuji's swords into Torunaga's hands here. I don't really know what's going to come of that,
well,
obviously, but yeah.
I totally agree with you, and I won't be surprised if, like, they had a couple of, you know, plebes stay back and continue
digging,
searching for Torunaga's swords. I think that it is funny, kind of, because now that Blackthorn knows that these are disgraced swords,
right?
He's like, here, have these.
Yeah, he immediately gets rid of them.
But I also think that he's... he's very torn. I think he's blown away by Ujiro's sacrifice here, but at the same time, like, as we've talked about, is starting to understand more of the culture. So also wants to show gratitude, show honor by bestowing this gift.
Yeah.
I think he's probably not thinking, I got to get rid of these disgraced samurai swords.
I don't think so either. I mean, it's such a cool scene because you see Torunaga go over this cliff, like, mm-hmm. the just ground falls out beneath him, and you're like, holy shit, he's a goner. Blackthorn has just told this guy, I want my ship, I want my men, I want to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
But the next thing you know, he's going over the cliff. I mean, dude, if it's just being real, if it's me, I'm waiting a few seconds to make sure the landslide is over, it's done, which it fucking wasn't, by the way.
Yeah.
But he goes right over, and I mean, it's like he clearly has a great amount of respect for Torunaga, mm-hmm. on top of like having sort of begun to understand the culture, understand the power of his words, grasp this whole society a little better. He does have a special relationship with this guy, with Torunaga, and I think it means a lot to him that he has just saved him.
Yep.
And recognizing, like, you know, you can't have a leader without swords. You can't even have a Hatamoto without swords. You got to have, you know... Torunaga's got to have his
but
blades.
But you do have to think that Torunaga also knows about the story behind these swords.
Right? But I don't know. He seems super... He's like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. But so, yeah, they... His son, Nagakoto, is like, holy shit, Dad, look. They see the landslide, like, sweeping across toward the town and seemingly taking out a shitload of Torunaga's army, I would note. It seemed like that was... Because we had seen this view earlier in the episode, and all of his men are down there. They have like this massive camp set up.
Huh.
I'm thinking in episode six, one of the things we'll be dealing with is the fact that their numbers have been even further diminished by this landslide.
Okay.
And Torunaga is so blown away by watching the landslide and the damage that he like falls back to his knees after he's just picked himself up with his swords using Fuji's disgraced family swords. And yeah, it's a crazy, crazy scene. Blackthorn rushes back to his house to find Fuji has been hurt. I couldn't get a feel. Could you tell like how bad her state of affairs was? Because like Fuji's on the ground on the porch, and it looks like they're tending to like almost a puncture wound on her or something.
I was thinking maybe a burn,
something
on her back.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Fuji is going to survive her injuries.
Well, yeah, they have her, like, blink to let us know she's okay. Because at first I was like, holy shit, she's dead.
But she's injured, and they obviously have a budding relationship involving some respect, you know, a mutual respect. And so that was a touching scene as well. But glad that Fuji-sama's okay.
Fuji-sama's fine. Blackthorn goes and cleans up around the rock that Ajiru placed in his garden.
That's right.
And that's that. So then we bounce over to Torunaga's
spy.
Puts the
rock back up.
Yeah, sets it back up, kind of cleans up around it, moves the branches out of the garden. Yeah. We bounce over to Torunaga's spy, Miragi.
Without a rock. It's just for growing.
That's right. Deep shit again, right? Tonomoto Akinao is the proud samurai spy guy. He has planted evidence in Ujiru's former home, proving him to be the spy that Yabushige was seeking out. So again, serving his purpose for the greater good, right? Because he's already dead, there's nothing more for Yabushige to do. So now, presumably, Yabushige will assume, I have dealt with the spy. There is no more spy. I can go and be a treacherous snake. But of course, we know the spy's still there. Back in Osaka, the episode closes with the heirs. It's fucking crazy to remember, but the whole setup here is about, like, Torunaga has been protecting this heir, right? He took the heir's mother, Lady Ochiba, to Edo, his hometown. The council was really pissed off about that. They're like, release Lady Ochiba. Give her back to us. Well, she's finally back from Edo, and she shows up here in Osaka and basically says, like, you guys are a bunch of worthless bums who can't get your shit together.
I'm in charge.
Look at me.
Yeah.
I am the captain now. I'm going to assume control of the Council of Regents. And Ishidu is obviously not pleased. And that is the wild end of this fifth chapter. It was nuts.
It was kind of interesting because, like, I felt like I left episodes 2, 3, and 4 where I could tell you what happened in the episode in like a few sentences. And you'd pretty much get the download of like what it was about. This was a much more traditional episode of television, but more reminiscent of like what I would call like a middle episode of a kind of epic season where like we're bouncing around a lot, we're touching base with a lot of characters. There's kind of a lot going on. We move from location to location, and it still was relatively tight. A lot of shows do a lot more in 60 minutes, but definitely one where like. Yeah, you kind of like, you get out of this episode and you almost feel exhausted from everything that's happened.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that Shogun has done so well is I would argue you could still tell me what happened in this episode in four sentences. But you would miss out on a ton of context in really cool moments and like the character development that is occurring, particularly with Blackthorn, right? As he kind of further puts himself into this culture. And... It's they're not biting off more than they can chew in any episode so far, but they're also not making anything feel like filler. Now that is a tough line to walk that they have accomplished really well so far. My big question for you on our way out. So what was your read on the heir's mother, on Lady Ochiba or Okiba, I'm assuming is one of the two pronunciations.
I don't know. I think that she certainly seems. Okay, my read was actually like let's go deep here. Is it possible that Ishido makes a face turn? Do we see Ishido and Torunaga coming back together?
I mean, I think it depends entirely on how this lady handles things, because you have to Torunaga and Ishido. Neither is a Christian.
Right. That's exactly. The rest of the regents are not. There's one other that's not a Christian. But the Christians seem to have, you know.
They have the upper hand.
They've got the upper hand.
That's what everybody's worried about, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Torunaga's already had to make concessions toward the church, being allowed to enter Edo and stuff like that. Like, I mean, it's possible. But the thing that occurred to me was we never learned much about Lady Ochiba.
No, this is really the first. Well, this is definitely the first time that we've ever heard her speak.
Right.
But I don't even think we'd seen her up until this point.
We may have seen her, but she has not been a part of the show, right?
Yeah, so all we knew. This character kind of stashed away.
Yeah, all we knew was that she was in Edo. And you kind of assume at one point.
Did she just have another baby? Did she have her baby in Edo?
Maybe. Because I do think her being pregnant was played up at some part of the beginning of the season. But we've met the heir before. We've seen Torunaga talking with the heir. And I kind of assumed in those moments that woman that was with the heir was Lady Ochiba. And I was kind of confused, but like not clearly what. They were separated.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, why did Torunaga take this lady to Edo?
Yeah, right, right.
He must not have, you could infer he doesn't have a very good relationship with her or doesn't trust her or that he has some reason to want to keep her away from the place of power in Osaka.
Right.
Right. And so now that she's back, one, he has to have known she'd be back. He's the one who released her. Mm-hmm. He's the one who let her go under the pressure of the Council of Regents. So two, I mean, is she bad? Because she definitely doesn't give you good guy vibes.
Oh no,
right,
that
here.
Was the definite bad guy. Bad guy framing.
Bad guy power trip vibes, right? Bad bitch vibes. She's coming in hot. She's like, I'm taking over this whole shit.
Disappointed, seemingly disappointed that they have not been able to take care of this Torunaga situation.
Exactly. Which again would lead you to believe like she's gonna be, you know, kind of the big bad.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Ishido in the Council of Regents turned out to be a dud.
A little, yeah.
They couldn't get shit done. Torunaga continued to work them. You know, she even says, like, he keeps getting away with shit. So, yeah, I imagine they have propped up the actual bad guy here, which is going to be the heir's mother, who maybe, I mean, because I genuinely did believe that Torunaga cared for the heir and wanted to make sure that eventually,
right? Oh, 100%.
Yes. So, yeah, he was boys with the heir's dad. I think he really does care about the heir and the heir making it to 16 years old to be able to take his seat of power. So he must not trust that Lady Ochiba is going to let that happen.
Yep.
Or let it happen properly. So, like, yeah, there's more drama yet to unfold here, and that we kind of get teed up with at the end of episode 5, which makes it all the more exciting. But yeah, this is getting really complicated. Like the whole situation here in Japan is getting really, really complex, and it's exciting. And like I said at the top of the show, man, it's impressive how much they've been able to do through 5 episodes while keeping it relatively simple episode by episode in terms of plot line.
Yep.
And I'm loving it, man. This has been a lot of fun so far. It's a really fun ride. I'm at the point now where I feel bad for people who aren't watching with us, because I could see how you would be hesitant to jump into this one. It's foreign language. You're having to deal with the subtitles. You know, it's a lot to chew.
Yeah, you got to pay attention for sure.
But my God, has it been fun through 5 episodes with 5 more remaining? Like you said, man, it's a full 10 episodes. Like, fuck, we've been watching shit lately.
We're half a season.
This would have been the penultimate episode of True Detective Night Country.
That's right.
You know? And we're at the halfway point, son. So, and we're getting fucking earthquakes that are almost taking out our main character and shit. And I think you said something last week that was really important to close out here. This show has been very, very Blackthorn heavy so far. Now, clearly Blackthorn and Torunaga are 1A, 1B, and I think you kind of said that it kind of flips back and forth between them. But if we're being real, Blackthorn has been 1A. Like, he's the guy we're getting the bulk of the screen time.
Especially the last two episodes, definitely.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned last week, in the book, he is the POV character and is definitely the lead.
Yeah.
And I feel like this show has done. I think it was really smart to have Torunaga be the second main kind of.
Right. Now, I'm curious to see, since they're in the same spot, Blackthorn just, you know, you could argue saved Torunaga's life.
Yeah.
Will we get more Torunaga screen time than we have? Because he's been one of the jokes I loved on Twitter was like, one of my favorite things about Shogun is Torunaga just disappear. He'll dip out, like disappear for an episode, and then show back up dripping in the tightest fit you've ever seen or whatever. And like that has kind of been his character so far. He's like, all right, this, and this. Peace. Y'all deal with the shit. And then he leaves.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we're going to get more Torunaga screen time with Blackthorn, potentially in part because they have to figure out how to make up for a bunch of men that he just lost in this damn landslide.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. When you see that second wave of the landslide, it's kind of, you can see that Earth, that Terra is moving.
And sweeping stuff up.
But
you can't tell exactly
what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so tough to read.
That will, again, and now I have full confidence that the show probably answers that within the first 5 minutes of next episode.
Right, and you love that?
Yeah.
They don't leave shit hanging in the wind
for
4 episodes. Uh-huh. You're getting answers pretty quickly week to week, which makes the cliffhangers a little more satisfying.
Yeah.
When you feel confident that they're not just going to screw you. Barrett and I will be back later this week on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, taking calls from our subscribers on Patreon in the Mollusk Militia tier, answering questions, addressing theories, and sharing takes. patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. That will do it for today's show. Remember, we are on all the major podcast platforms, as well as youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles for your viewing pleasure. Please subscribe on YouTube, throw us a like, leave a comment if you're watching on YouTube. Shout out to everyone watching on YouTube. We love y'all. We appreciate you. For more from me, Ross Bolin, check out the Ross Bolin podcast, wherever podcasts are played. And for more from Mr. Dudley, where can the people follow you to keep up with all your content?
Catch me on Instagram at Barrett Dudley.
At Barrett Dudley. I'm at WR Bolin on Instagram and X, formerly known as Twitter. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We look forward to hearing everyone's reactions on Patreon and reading them on social media as well. Until next time, we ask that you remember the Eightfold Fence.